This is the Education Gadfly Show.
So is ignorance spelled with an E or an A?
Which part of ignorance?
Good point. There's no
I think it starts
e.
with an I.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli, at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, the Don Draper of Education Policy, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mikey.
How are you?
How you doing with your Mad Men fixation, huh?
I know. So, yeah, my wife and I, we started watching Mad Men, and we're up to, like, episode, I don't know, 8 in the first season, and I really do enjoy it. Janie sent me this great Saturday Night Live clip, I guess, from a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's probably from a year and a half ago, maybe.
About, you know, how Don Draper's, you know, secrets to picking up women.
Whoa.
And, you know, not that as a married man I'd ever use them, but, you know, it is true I have a man crush on Don Draper. Mm. He's one cool cat.
And how's Megs? Does she enjoy it as much as you do?
She does. She really, yeah. But, you know, it's dark. And I have to say, you know, we can only take so much of it because it is rather depressing at times. And she also does get angry sometimes at how sexist it is, which, of course, is the point. It's set in 1960. Things were sexist back then.
Is it sexist and bother Nico? How's he with all that?
Nico's asleep at the time.
Whoa.
Yeah. But I think it would bother him because, you know, he's that kind of guy.
He's grown up in Tacoma Park.
Well, there's that. Yes, absolutely. Rick, I'm excited. This is our last show of the year. We're going to do something a little special.
Whoa.
Well, we're going to talk about, you know, best and worst of 2010, predictions for 2011. This is our very special wrap-up Education Gadfly Show.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm a tingling.
We're, I know, and cleaning out the house for a good 2011. So why don't we get started, Janie, with Pardon the Gadfly.
All right, so let's talk about the best and worst of 2010. The Corrette Task Force named the following as best: Waiting for Superman, the release of LA value-added data, the DC teacher contract, and an IES study on math curriculum. And as the worst, the stimulus and edge jobs bills, Fenty's loss and Ree's departure, Crist's veto of Senate Bill 6, and the devise of the DC voucher program. And on both lists is Race to the Top. What are your picks for best and worst?
Sheesh, well, I don't know. The four that Janie just mentioned is their best. I'd give them maybe one out of those that I actually like. Yeah. LA Times release, I thought, was enormously problematic. The IES study on math curriculum, I can't even imagine putting that on your I noticed it list. That's got to be a favor to Russ because he sits on that.
Well, or Bill Evers.
Or Bill Evers.
Those guys really like math.
Waiting for Superman cost Gates $2 million in promotional activities and grossed about $6 million. When you've got a pony one out of every $3 and you've got, you know, litany of publicity and that's all you get. Not that exciting. The DC teacher contract, I think, was probably not a bad call.
Woohoo!
Oh, and they had Race to the Top up there. We know how I feel about RTT.
Right. So, and what about worst? I mean, I guess some of these things you think would be on your worst
list. Yeah, most of their best would be on my worst.
I have to say, I put the LA Times thing on the worst, I think. Absolutely. Waiting for Superman, I feel like I can't really comment on because I haven't seen it yet. But I understand that it comes out on DVD February 22nd, and I will be sure to Netflix it right away. I think they'll stream it right away, or will I have to send out for the DVD?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
You'll have to fit it in between Mad Men.
That's true. I know. We'll see how far along we are in Mad Men at that point.
Actually, I don't think it was a particularly good year for bests, I got to say. I think that for me, the bests were that we finally got Duncan to give that new normal speech.
Right.
I thought the speech was the best speech I've heard in the decade by Secretary of Ed. But every day since then, he has basically walked it back, mm-hmm. whether it was special needs or more money for this or that. I thought Central Falls, some of the markers laid down initially by Obama, were good, but every day since then has been kind of disheartening on that score.
Right.
I think, you know, for me, probably the most, the bests were the things related to people finally starting to talk about productivity seriously. Mm-hmm. Bill Gates talking about it, Marguerite Rose's book, the Texas folks launching the Center on Productivity. I think, other than that, I think it's actually been a pretty disheartening year.
Well, I would throw Governor Christie into that mix as mm-hmm. well on the productivity and, you know, going on, taking on the unions on many fronts and getting lauded for it. Now being talked about as a serious candidate for 2012, perhaps. I think that's going to embolden some other Republican governors, certainly the newly elected ones like John Kasich. Of course, the big thing that's missing on this list as best, Common Core, baby. Common Core. I mean, here we are. Big year for national standards, something that's near and dear dear to our heart at Fordham for a long time. We're up to 44 states signing on to what we think are very good standards. Obviously, it's just the beginning. Lots ahead of us, but you know, still a big milestone nonetheless.
We look back 5 years from now. What's going to be remembered as kind of the best or most significant
development? Yeah, I think it's going to be Common Core. I mean, of course, depending on many, many variables. Do the tests come out right? Do they end up getting used? Do the states bail between now and then? But yeah, I mean, conceivably,
couple of sticking points.
Well, people aren't going to go look back and say, okay, a couple of these speeches that, you know, people
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Yeah, exactly.
No, actually, this is what I worry about, right? So the stuff that we remember is I-3 and RTT and all this nonsense, which is going to amount to nothing, which is going to be like comprehensive school reform, mm-hmm. was 5 years out. People forget about it. It won't amount to much. Yeah, I mean, I think for all of the self-congratulation enthusiasm, mm-hmm. It's going to wind up being pretty much a non-year for ed reform.
I think the other big news, I don't know if I'd put this on either list, though, is wireless generation being sold for $400 million mm-hmm. To Rupert Murdoch. Interesting. I mean, I think you're going to see another little gold rush here into this space. I mean, that's a lot of money. People mm-hmm. look at that and say, hey, you can really make, you know, you can get rich in education.
And is your offer to Joel Klein on the podcast to out there?
Have not heard back from him yet.
Whoa.
So have perhaps you offered to throw in the deal.
Have you offered to throw in the gadfly itself?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of old media at this point.
I mean, Rupert Murdoch, he's a media guy. He might appreciate a magnificent media property like the gadfly.
You know, I think if he knew that Amber was frequently on his Fox and Friends show, that would help. We'll have to play that up. Okay, Janie, topic number two.
All right, now that we've talked about 2010, let's talk predictions for 2011. Look into your crystal ball. What do you see?
Let me start with a few.
Please do.
Please do. Okay. Kathy Black, she's gone by Easter.
Whoa.
Okay. Boom. I'm laying it down.
Nice.
Her gaffes continue. She loses support even among the sort of middle class, upper middle class in New York. Going to say, what universe is she living in? I think there's going to be, I think it's going to be very easy for her to botch this whole release of the teacher value added data if they go forward with that. I think a lot of her top deputies are going to get the heck out of there. I think Bloomberg's going to be thinking about a run and seeing that this is a mess and he's going to do something about it.
Wow.
Boom. Second big prediction. ESEA, new law by Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. Number three, I'll just stop with three.
Okay.
Is that we're going to see, and this is more, you know, we're going to see a lot of lawsuits, I think, in the states. Fiscal equity lawsuits are going to come back with a vengeance because, you know, states are going to make big cuts to their formulas. Those cuts are going to hit the high poverty school districts much more than the others. But the twist is you're not just going to see these big urban or rural districts suing. They're going to be joined by charter schools, I think, that are going to sue as well and maybe team up with these folks because they're going to get whacked more than anybody else also.
Man.
And I think you're going to see this is going to just throw the state budgets into even more chaos because some of these lawsuits are going to be successful.
Look at you, baby. Mm.
I come ready to play, Rick.
You're bringing some heat. All right. Here's three predictions of my own. First one, teacher pensions are going to be huge. Healthcare benefits, I think we're going to see at least one state try to seriously push some kind of bankruptcy provision in a city. I'd love to see it be Indianapolis, but I don't know when or where it'll be. But somebody's going to try to get an urban district out from under benefits and healthcare using General Motors TARP.
Okay.
And if that shot happens, that's going to change the calculus nationally forever for teacher unions.
Wait, when you say General Motors TARP, you don't mean with a federal bailout kind of thing attached?
No, but I mean that's going to be the kind of idea they're going to run with. Second, mm-hmm. NCLB, ESEA. Not only will there be no legislation in 2011, there won't be any legislation in 2012, but will pass. I'm making a prediction right now, 2 years out. For August or September 2012, you will get a patch suspending the consequences of the NCLB remedies for schools identified as NI and districts identified. And third, I think we're going to see nobody say a bloody word about education in the Republican primaries. Because whether you're Pawlenty or Romney or what have you, the last thing you need to do is talk about what you're going to do in D.C. Mm-hmm. as far as having the feds fix the schools. So,
wow, that's crazy. That's right. 2011 is the year for the pre-primaries.
We're running it up. No, Iowa, baby. Iowa, New Hampshire in next January.
Wow. So, right, by this time next year, it'll be down to the wire.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Very nicely done, Rick. Hey, can I use any of those?
Hell yeah.
Okay. Stay tuned for the Gadfly. All right. Janie, that is all the time that we have for Pardon the Gadfly, our special end of year edition. It's now time for everybody's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, we're winding down here. Almost
we
got,
are.
Got all your Christmas shopping done?
I did. I went shopping on Saturday.
Yeah. Right. And then what happened?
I got food poisoning in the food court. Had a lovely chicken kebab that apparently had been sitting in a refrigerator for quite
a
while.
You never, never eat an aged chicken kebab.
Yeah.
And not only that, Amber, tell the story. You had an instinct that it was a bad kebab.
I saw them take the kebab out of what looked like a college dorm refrigerator, those little tiny refrigerators, put it on the grill, and my brain said, I wonder how long that kebab has been in that refrigerator. Just passing thought.
What
apparently
mall would
a while.
Stand,
that
so.
Would be Montgomery Mall, the grill kebab. People, I have it out for you. The grill kebab, Montgomery Mall.
That is real accountability.
There you have it.
That is. That's love public it. Transparency.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, did this keep you from finishing your shopping?
Gratefully, I was finished. So there was no wrapping. There was no any of that. They're still in the bags in my living room right now. So there you have it.
That's why she doesn't have your gift for you here today.
Very green.
Damn.
I know.
How many years have you been at Fordham now?
Over three.
So yeah. I can claim some credit for three plus good years.
Yeah, you can.
There you go.
Absolutely. All right, Amber.
A little bit more of my free uncompensated service for Fordham.
Yes.
I do what I can.
We're going to get some
Rick,
fat bill
poor
one
man
day.
Hess. That's right. Okay.
All right. I hope I'm going out with a bang with the study. You both better like the study because I like the study. Okay. We're talking about productivity. So this week, we have a timely and useful study from the Texas Comptroller's Office called Connecting the Dots, School Spending and Student Progress. It is a good report. The office was charged by the Texas State Legislature to identify Texas school districts that achieve strong student performance while keeping spending growth down. Perhaps because even after taking enrollment growth into account, per pupils rose by 63% in the last decade in the Lone Star State. Anywho, using a value-added model that controlled for various student district and campus characteristics. Analysts measured academic progress over 3 years in reading and math. They also devised a spending index for each district and campus by comparing them to their fiscal peers. In the end, each district or campus receives a rating of 1 to 5 stars, which integrates value-added and spending data in order to identify districts that produce strong academic growth at a lower cost than their peers. It's what Eric Hanischek calls a national innovation that should be copied by other states. 5 stars means very high student progress, very low spending. 1 star means very low student progress, very high spending. Bottom line, 43 of 1,235 school districts and charter schools analyzed receive 5 stars. The report goes further by recommending solutions to cut spending like relaxing class size, sharing facilities, etc., etc. It dances around cutting teacher positions, but it does advocate cutting administrator positions by roughly 1,500. To get it back down to its 98-99 levels, which could save, they say, $115 million annually. All in all, great contribution to doing more with less.
Oh, love it.
Hells yeah.
Packed nice. A lot. And they had Steve Rivkin, Mike Podgursky, Eric Hanischek. I mean, you know, some thoughtful folks, you know, going in and, you know, making sure the value added was up to date, combining those data sources. And then they have this web tool where you go in and you can, like, put your district in and compare it to your peer.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So, anyway.
This is great. Productivity. Yep. Hey, all right. So when you look at these districts, I mean, are there some urban districts on there, suburban? I mean, how did the demographics get all mixed in with that?
I wish I knew.
I think what they did was they controlled for cost of student population, I think, on the obvious criteria.
Okay.
So that's how you
there were like 32 control variables.
Right, right.
Yeah. Because what you want to do is, right, you want to cost adjust for how much it actually, you know, it's the same way you do with the weighted student funding.
Yeah.
How much does it cost to educate this kid?
Right.
And then how good are you? Because, right, this is the problem. Like, we've seen it this week in D.C. with Montgomery County and Prince George's County when they're crying crocodile tears because they're only getting 2 or 3% increases next year.
Right.
And they're asking, how Montgomery County saying, how can we possibly run schools without lots of money?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got to tell you, a superintendent who's running a great school system for 75 cents on the dollar ought to be getting more recognition than a superintendent who's running an equally good system with a whole lot of extra money.
Right. And I'd be curious, too, in those school districts that, you know, are we talking about districts that by and large have lower per pupil costs or just really effective outcomes for the same amount of money? And where what's the limitation? I mean, look, school districts spend what they're given, right? I mean, you know, they don't
much
go out
like
and,
foundations.
Right. Yeah. A little bit like that. Exactly. I mean, they don't volunteer to go out and say, you know what? I think we're going to lower our costs this year. I mean, they only lower their costs if they have to. So what I'm saying is there's some districts that just don't have a choice, you know, but to spend less because they have less. And then the question is how they do it more productively.
Mm-hmm. This would be a good discipline for a foundation like Thomas Fordham.
We're an institute.
My bad.
Like right.
Then it applies equally well.
We're a public
well,
charity.
Applies equally well to think tanks.
Mm. I like it. All right. So what music goes
that
along
so
with this?
Good. All right. So since we're talking about Texas, we have a bunch of cowboys playing Texas Hold'em in The Gambler by Kenny Rogers. Love this song.
You got to know when to hold 'em.
When to hold 'em.
Know when to fold 'em. Know when to walk away. Know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough to count. When the deal is done.
Hey, man, I love that song.
I gotta say, highly inappropriate though.
Yeah, it does. Look, it's hard. I mean, we have all these studies more and more about money, and I think we're struggling to find money songs.
You know,
tell you what.
But we're talking about districts being savvy and productive, and then we're doing a song about the gambler.
I know, but it's a great song. Like, all right,
it's a great song. I don't know.
If you have ideas for money related songs,
you know what I would have gone with for that one?
Please send them to Amber.
You know what I would have gone with for that
what
one?
What would you have gone with?
Would have gone with Hurt So Good.
Not bad. Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we'll get you in on the editorial side of this shop.
Sometime, I never know. Given my luxurious compensation package for Fordham, I can't imagine that you're not fully utilizing my capabilities.
All right. You're right. You know, you do have a wide range of knowledge about music. But folks out there, if you have music-related songs in mind, please to
music,
Amber.
As opposed to non-music-related songs.
You have songs. Money-related songs. Money-related songs. If you're money, send them to Amber, A. Winkler at edexcellence.net.
That's it.
There you go.
All right. It is now time for What's Up With That with Daniela Fairchild.
Woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had a big old cup of coffee to clear my head. Telephone rang and you wanna chat? Well, sit on down and tell me what's up with that. What up with that?
Okay, Daniela, in the chair for Chris Irvine, who is on vacation this week. What you got for us?
So is ignorance spelled with an E or an A?
Which part of ignorance?
Good point. There's no
I think it starts
e.
with an I.
There's no
there
e.
is an A and there is an E at the end.
Is it preparation or preparation? I don't know, you could ask. Could you use them in a sentence? Sure, how about, without proper preparation, American students will be forever ignorant. Starting in the new year, middle and high school students in Oregon will be able to use computer spell check on state writing tests. It'll be the first state to do so, then the NAEP has already begun allowing students to use spell check on its writing section. The thought is that typos and keyboarding errors shouldn't matter when judging a student's writing ability. Okay, but what about proofreading skills or the actual ability to write, both of which will be deemed irrelevant under this new system? Yes, it's important that Johnny knows how to appropriately use gerunds as a subject and how to cohesively formulate an argument. His writing skills should be judged for grammar and content, but they should also be judged in how well Johnny knows how to use the words he's using, and if he knows how to edit his work. Never mind that the acceptance of spell check on state and national assessments could easily open the floodgates for a whole host of other technologies, which probably, well-intentioned, would do nothing more for students than provide them with a false sense of their own capabilities. Soon we'll have grammar check, bye-bye knowledge of gerunds, thesauruses, calculators, and hell, why not even allow the kids to access Google? Let's not lose respect for the basics here, people. If we do, it'll be the ill-equipped students' future employers asking, when they receive written correspondences rife with errors, what up with that?
I have to say, I don't know, am I going soft? I'm not sure I agree with Daniela on this one.
I agree with her wholeheartedly. I think you've gone way soft.
Okay, are we talking about high school kids here? I mean, this is the same issue as calculators, right? You certainly don't want to have little kids using calculators because when you're little, it's important that you learn how to do arithmetic. Once you've mastered that and you're into calculus, etc., then sure, it makes sense to use calculators. Otherwise, you're wasting a lot of time doing something you don't need to do. So I think it's the same kind of thing. At some point...
You think spelling something like peculiar is as much a time waste as having a kid who's doing multivariate equations doing by hand?
Look, I'm just saying that, in the real world, when people are going to be writing, they're going to be doing it on a computer and it's going to have spell check. So at some point, it seems like, what's the big deal? I mean, these kids do papers and they do their papers on the computers.
Have you ever used spell check where spell check took a word and corrected it into something other than the word you intended it to be?
Yes. So that would show up on these kinds of tests. I mean, so you
What do you mean show up on the test?
Well, I mean, if the kid was going along and they changed their word, and they are responsible for that. They would need to make sure that
don't you want kids learning what the correct meaning and spelling is in the course of their 12 years of kid instruction?
So if we're talking about sixth graders, I'd say no spell check. We're talking about 12th graders? Well, I'm okay.
You don't think they're learning new words in grade 7 to 12 that they didn't learn in K-6?
I don't generally think they're learning new words. That's a big problem, but I don't know. That's my view. I just it's such a fine line. I mean, if you're talking about a class assignment, kids go and do research papers, they're certainly going to use spell check, grammar check, Google, all the rest, and they need to learn how to do that. Same in college.
I'll tell you what I wrote about on my blog today was something that always strikes me when I go to these tech confused high schools. I was at a couple the other week. These kids, they have iPads, they have one-on-one computing. What do? As best I can tell, they spend 80% of the instructional time going to Google, Googling for terms that pop on Wikipedia, and then cutting and pasting from Wikipedia back to whatever the hell PowerPoint they're putting together for class. I have no idea what any of this delivers that we didn't learn copying out of the World Book Encyclopedia 25 or 30 years ago, except that instead of even having it be transcribed by hand to maybe absorb a bit of knowledge, kids are simply using, and we get impressed because to us, old people, the ability to use a PowerPoint looks like you must be smart.
I'm totally down with that. But that means those schools are giving terrible assignments. I mean,
this is pretty routine. I mean, I think this is pretty typical.
Well, this is pretty bad. I mean, so you need to be smart enough to make assignments that will require the kids to think. And they can do whatever searching and clicking and cutting and pasting they want. But is the argument there? Is the thought there? That is the issue, not spell check. I rest my case.
Wow. You have just gone 21st century skills soft. No wonder you like the Common Core.
Oh, that was a low blow. Ouch. Have you read the Common Core?
Yes. But I worry about how it's going to be implemented, and soft, fuzzy guys like you make me worry even more.
Okay, thank you, Jay Green. All right, that is all the time we have for today and for this year. We are heading into the new year, and until then...
Mike, I'm going to miss you, baby. Have yourself a great Christmas and New Year's.
Likewise, Rick, you have a wonderful and happy new year, and we'll see you in 2011.
I'm Rick Hess.
I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.